Well, Done With Debt is a consumer advocate firm specializing in debt relief strategies. I have asked Michael Pearson to join me to share his strategies and advice for people that want to end their debt permanently. Hi, Michael.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. So talk to us about credit card and loan interest rates have skyrocketed. How does this affect most Americans? Because we're all dealing with this.
Well, that's a great question. It's tough because it affects all Americans here. One thing that we always notice is that we can't control the interest rate. So your debt keeps building faster and faster. It's getting bigger and bigger. And what was once a manageable situation is now unmanageable. And with inflation going crazy, with just groceries, gasoline, rents, all the basic necessities, at some point something has to break and you realize that you're not going to get out of this debt maybe in years, sometimes decades. So it's tough.
Yeah. So a lot of people look to either get a loan or declare bankruptcy, but that can actually make it worse. I struggle with insomnia, Michael. I don't know if you do, because I know a lot of people, you go to bed waking thinking about your debt, you wake up thinking about it, or whatever your problems are. What's your advice for someone struggling with debt in general?
Go to donewithdebt.com, answer 3 to 4 questions, get in contact with us before you even make your next payment to that credit card. Before you call the creditors yourself, give us a call. There is hope. We will help you. Simply go to donewithdebt.com, fill out a couple questions. We'll have one of our experts call you right away. It's free at no cost to you. We don't charge anything until we start settling your debts. So what do you have to lose?
There you go. Easy peasy. That's a complex financial term that I hope you understand. Go to donewithdebt.com. That is donewithdebt.com. Michael, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
First happy hour, going to do a costume change, separation of church and uterus, and nevertheless, she persisted, girl power, because it's happy hour with Busy Phillips.
Yeah!
Hey. I'm here.
We're going to get the joke out of the way. You were supposed to do it last week, but you were busy. You've never heard that joke.
Never.
Just my whole life.
Yeah.
That's all right.
You are already my hero. You are my shiro, because first of all, you not only endured talking to Louis Gohmert.
It was tough.
But you kicked his ass.
Oh, thanks.
You were so brilliant and smart and well-spoken. And
oh, thanks.
No offense. Maybe you don't want to be partisan, but he's such a...
Gohmert.
Doofus.
Yeah. He's the worst.
Right.
His name kind of says it all.
That was my favorite moment in congressional history, I think, when you just said, you know, I'm actually not a physician, but I just played one on ER.
Yeah.
That was fantastic. And the look on his face, like, oh.
Well, I think he got thrown because the room kind of erupted in laughter. And I think, you know, look, we can talk about the whole thing, but, you know, we sort of had a feeling that if anyone was going to ask me anything, it would be him, because he wants to try to get on Fox News. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And I think he maybe mistakenly thought I was an easy target.
Right. Here's where I beat up the little stupid actress from Hollywood.
Exactly. And that's fine. And I'm happy to have played that part in his brain so that I could throw him off with my joke. And I think the joke really threw him. I think he didn't know how to recover really from that. And he was, because also what he was asking me was completely nonsensical. So I sort of kind of filibustered for a minute because I was also trying to take up his time.
Because I know you say, oh, I don't like the word brave, but that is brave. I mean, your whole campaign, you know me, is that, you know, what is the statistics? 1 in 4 women have had an abortion
before the age of 45.
Yeah. And you, that's me. You know me.
Yeah.
You think you don't know me, but that's, but it is a deeply personal, intense thing. And for you to go there in that public setting, mm-hmm. I know you talked about on Twitter that you were scared, but it really was astounding that you're there to talk about your very painful personal experience. You were raped at 14.
Oh, no.
Abortion at 15.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. But the rape has nothing to do with the abortion.
Right.
Different.
No. I got
okay.
it. But
okay.
Anyway, but
yeah.
But anyway, but then there's a woman there that survived an abortion,
mm-hmm.
and he's like, well, what do you think about that? And you were like, well, I'm not here to talk about birth. I'm here to talk about abortion. Like,
right.
what does he think you were going to say? Well, I would have tried to kill her again. I'd like to kill her now. Like,
here's
what,
the thing. They're just trying to change the narrative. They're just trying
to talk
shift.
About her experience.
Right. But they're just trying. They realize that. I'm like, look, the latest statistic was yesterday, I believe, from NPR. 77% of Americans are in favor of safe, legal abortion with access for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
That's a vast majority of this country.
Yeah.
But the small minority has been so loud and so vocal for so long, screaming half-truths, mistruths. And this is their latest, you know, attempt is to shift the narrative from what we know, which is that 93% of abortions happen in the first trimester. Abortion is a safe medical procedure. And they're trying to make this conversation be about something that is a total anomaly. The woman that testified on behalf of the Republican side, you know, tells her story, her personal story. And I can't speak to that, but I can speak to that it seems like malpractice and not something that would happen in any way, shape or form at any point.
But it shows how clueless
now.
Men are at least Louis Gohmert, that you're just like, what? You're asking her to comment on another woman's experience that she's not here to talk about.
I think what he was trying to get me to say is that babies shouldn't be murdered.
Right,
I believe that's what he wanted me to say. Well, no, of course, sir. Babies should not be murdered. Like, you know, I because that's what they want. They just want to keep repeating the same bullshit so that they can.
Hey, Busy, you said it. You said, first of all, this is before most women know they're pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I love what you said. You said the only why women should have to provide is that she has bodily autonomy. You said, I'm mm-hmm. so sad we have to sit here in front of a row of politicians and give deeply personal statements because the why doesn't matter. It mm-hmm. should not matter. I am a human being that deserves autonomy in this mm-hmm. country that calls itself free. I mean, that was just so powerful.
Thank you.
You know, I just I'm so proud of you. I don't
Thank
even
you.
Know you, but I know everyone feels like you're their best friend.
Well, this is the first
time. So it's not just me.
This is the first time we've ever had a guest who canceled on us because they were going to testify before Congress. Which, if you're going to have an excuse.
Oh, okay, better. I was like, okay, better.
Yeah. I can live with this.
I mean, you know, I do. It's interesting because, look, the other side, the anti-choice side, has their views, and their views are really based in religious ideology. And that was an interesting part for me of being a part of this process, was sitting in front of, you know, this subcommittee, this judicial subcommittee on the Constitution, civil rights and civil liberties, and to listen to the Republican leader of that of wait what is it called sorry
House,
now I'm blanking
House Judiciary?
No, he's not the chairman. The chairman's the Democrat
ranking member.
I was blanking on ranking member. So listen to Ranking Member Johnson speak for his 5 minutes, you know, very sincerely, that life begins at conception, that we, you know, that we are all created in his own image. I mean, he was like literally talking about God, you know, and that these men mostly are legislating based on their religious beliefs and their religious ideologies and not actually what their constituents want. Because obviously we know that the majority of, I mean, vast majority of Americans believe that this should be safe and legal for everybody.
Yeah. And
who wants
rare, safe and legal, as we used to say. No one, wants an abortion. No one, I mean, that
well,
was
some people
so,
do.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I'm talking about how, you know, personal this was to you, that it was a difficult decision. It's not like people are like, woohoo, you know, I mean, it's...
They have a tendency to try to demonize women and healthcare providers for the choices that they make about their bodies. And that has, in the last 20 years, I believe, really pushed women who have made the choice to have an abortion, who have had abortions, feel a great deal of shame and have forced them to feel as though they can't talk freely about it with their friends, with their colleagues, with their family members. And part of the impetus behind me wanting to, you know, say on my late night show that I had an abortion when I was 15 and open the conversation to social media in the way that I did, although there have been plenty of other, you know, there's hashtag shout your abortion. There's hashtag I had an abortion. There are other hashtags that existed before you know me. But I just felt like, here's the deal, guys, this the other side has been so loud. They're in the minority. Yeah. We're in the majority. We have to just be loud. But we just have to be loud.
I'm not being a typical Hollywood suck up because clearly I work in my basement. But it is so powerful what you're doing. And it reminded me of Julia Louis-Dreyfus. Remember? She's like one in four women get breast cancer. Mm-hmm. Today, that woman is me. You know, and when you use your voice for something that's so personally painful and emotional, I mean, just in case people don't know, just to reset, in the wake of Alabama's the passage of this bill, the whatever that they called it, that's where you started the hashtag you know me with call for other testimonies. You said one in four women have had an abortion. Many people think they don't know someone who has, but you hashtag you know me. So let's do this. I'm a gay woman, and I said, you know, this sort of like, you know, the how we got marriage equality, which I didn't think would happen in my life, mm-hmm. is because you know someone. It's like, oh, it's your sister or aunt, mm-hmm. uncle, mm-hmm. or niece,
neighbor,
lawyer, dentist, or oh, like, you know, but that's why that's so powerful. And you said, let's share it and start to end the shame. Use you know me, share your truth. And so you just said, I am a human being that deserves autonomy in a country that's free. And it's just, I thought it was so powerful.
Thank
that
you.
Every individual's circumstances are different. And I'm not as highbrow as you are. This morning, I speculated on the show that Louis Gohmert perhaps has issues because maybe he was removed from the womb with like salad tongs and or something that
Stephanie.
There's a shape of his head that has something to do with what's going on with his brain is what. Busy.
Yeah. Maybe an early childhood injury there.
Something. A tractor.
There is a disconnect for sure. There is. I didn't want to get kicked out, you know. So you have to you do have to toe the line because I really didn't want to be kicked out.
Congressman
that terrorist babies should have been aborted? Because, you know, remember when he spread the lie about terrorist babies?
Yep.
Yes.
Remember when he just made that up out of nowhere?
Yep.
Terrorist babies.
Did you feel like saying, Congressman, are you really fucking a congressman? Seriously?
I mean.
Okay. Let me answer that.
Yeah. He was.
You teamed up with ACLU. I love that Tina Fey was the one who's your producer on your show. Mm-hmm. But you. She texted you and said you should start a hashtag thing.
Yeah, she said I've been thinking about...
She's not on social media, but
no, she's not. Right. But she was like, I've been thinking about the statement that you made on the show last night. I was talking to a friend about it who had also had an abortion, and she thought that it was a really powerful way and very simplistic way to say it. You know, just you know me. You don't have to say why. You don't have to say when. You don't have to say anything else. Just you know me. And Tina was like, I think you should start that hashtag. I feel like people would like it. And also inspired by Tarana Burke's, you know, hashtag me too, which really I feel like made such a huge impact. You know, it's not just about women sharing their stories in the New York Times. It was about women sharing their stories of everyday harassment and sexual assault that made a lot of men that I'm friends with, a lot of, you know, and look, I live and work here in Los Angeles and Hollywood, friends with a lot of liberal dudes. And they were like, wait, really? It's that bad? It's that bad for women?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think that was part of what I was hoping with the You Know Me would happen. And I think it did. I mean, to start a conversation is good.
I saw the ad. You tuned with ACLU. Mm-hmm. I saw the ad on, you know, all over MSNBC, CNN. But I mean,
that's what Stephanie watches all afternoon. So,
yeah.
So there's no chance I was going to miss that.
It's burned into her brain.
People ask me, did you watch whatever? I'm like, if Rachel Maddow didn't say it, I didn't see it. but so talk about the reaction to it, because you talked about that a little bit. because you said you were overwhelmed, you know, mm-hmm. the support, you know, you said certainly there's some people that call me names on Instagram, but the support has been overwhelmingly yeah. positive.
Yeah, I would say it's been the majority of it has been positive. And then beyond that, I don't know if 5 years ago I would have been emotionally tough enough or strong enough to deal with the trolls. Right. But I feel empowered by a few things. Number one, I don't care.
Good.
I have that, and that I've been doing this for so long that I'm like, I more people call me a cunt before 6 a.m. than most people all day long. So I'm just like, okay.
Yeah. And number two, it felt like at this moment in particular that it just feels so much bigger than a couple people
yeah.
trolling me on Instagram or on Twitter. You know, yeah. I just feel like the women that are going to be affected by this, you know, women who are already living in poverty, women who, you know, are live in rural areas, you know, women of color, transgender people, like, you know, there are so many people that are going to be affected by this. And so that's not me.
Yeah.
But if I can use my voice and my platform to try yeah. to mitigate some of the horrific things that are, you know, could happen if these laws actually get put into place, because, you know, none of them have gone into effect yet. It's 2020.
Right. That's why we have to speak out. Right. And because you're a woman of privilege.
Yeah.
By the way, part of the message you're sending is, how are you ever going to stop rich women like me in Hollywood from getting mm-hmm. abortions?
Oh,
you
yeah,
know?
No.
And it's like Gloria Steinem wrote this great thing a long time ago about, if we put men that want to buy guns through the same gauntlet we put women through. Right.
I know,
some
I love
states
that.
There's one abortion clinic, and there's what, you know, mm-hmm. what women have to go through is
yeah.
just
the woman that who has the last standing clinic, and I believe she's the last standing provider in Alabama, was also on the congressional panel with me, and she was really incredible. And you know, she's just very committed to providing complete health care for the women of Alabama, and that includes being able to provide abortions. And I think that people are very, I mean, we know people are very reductive, right? Like, everyone is about everything always. But, you know, I think that what the anti-choice people have been really good at is making it a single issue that people can kind of like latch onto, which is like, yeah. don't murder babies. Right. That's yeah. what yeah. they say.
Right.
And we don't want to murder babies. But the also really unbelievably sad truth is, so many women who need to have abortion care, need to for medical reasons.
Yeah.
They're, you know, some, in many, many cases, they're very yeah. wanted.
Remember, we've been through this before.
Fetuses.
Remember Rush Limbaugh calling, Sandra Fluke a slut because she testified like you did. She's brave enough mm-hmm. to go before Congress to talk about how she needs birth control pills for endometriosis.
Mm.
And slut right. or like, just, I went on CNN. I told this story at that point talking about this, and I got all this hate mail, which I'm sure you've gotten, that they were like, you just
close
want
your
free
yeah,
birth control pills, you whore. And I'm like, well, yes, as a middle-aged lesbian, I am eating those up like Skittles. So yes, you're correct. This is,
I mean, it's interesting. There, the one of the other personal, you know, people on the panel giving her own personal experience was this young girl. Did you watch the whole thing?
I didn't watch the whole thing, but this girl. The important part that you were in.
Well, she gave her testimony last. This girl, HK Gray, is her name, and she's 18 years old. And she got pregnant when she was 15. She had a baby when she was 16 years old. She went to get an IUD so she wouldn't get pregnant again. She's raising her child. She went to get an IUD so she couldn't get pregnant again in the state of Texas. She was denied because you need parental consent. Her father is homeless and her mother is incarcerated. So it's
yeah.
she can't get parental consent, nor yeah. could she yeah. get emancipated. So she didn't get the IUD. She didn't get birth control. Meanwhile, this 16-year-old girl is raising a child that she can make all of the medical decisions for.
Right.
But the state does not allow her to insane. Get birth control for herself.
Insane.
It's insane.
All right, let's wait a minute. First of all, for God's sakes, we just got so political. We had a political nerdgasm.
Sorry.
But,
no, that's
ladies
awesome.
And gentlemen, if you don't, Busy Phillips, good God, we probably all know her from something else, right?
Lots of stuff.
Freaks and Geeks, Dawson's Creek, Cougar Town, where you were award winning.
We play Cougar Town clips. Drinking is a big part of the morning radio show.
Yeah.
We play clips from Cougar Town all the time
during
our commercial breaks.
We only drink during this, which we were very happy that you accepted what are you drinking?
A tequila and soda. Thank you.
Tequila and what?
Tequila and soda. Tequila and soda.
Very simple.
Yeah. Very nice.
It's a rose tequila.
Mm-hmm. We have a lot in common.
Uh-oh.
We both had a late night show canceled.
Oh,
Although
you did.
Yours was really fantastic. And there might be Emmy stuff, and you might get picked up somewhere else, which
that would be awesome.
How I ended up. But this is not you, Busy.
What network was your show on?
It was syndicated by Disney.
It was syndicated and then on Fox?
In 1995 when I was
It was like on
five.
Like the UPN and WB networks.
What that thing. Was.
Yeah. I took John Stewart's slot when his late, and I had twice John Stewart's ratings. He had a late night show that got canceled. People don't remember.
Yeah.
Because you talk a little bit about the sexism where it is sort of amazing. I had the exact same ratings as Conan O'Brien, but he was on a network and he was a guy and he had a contract. John Stewart, God love him, is brilliant, got another chance on The Daily Show. But
they all get other chances.
I mean, you got 6 months. I got like 13 weeks. But it is interesting. I mean, first of all, I loved what you tweeted. You said, we're proud that Busy Tonight writing staff was 100% female. Mm-hmm. Our creative team, producers, field team, director, et cetera, was 93% female, 43% diverse. Mm-hmm. Anyway, but you were included, in Emmy Hopefuls for 2019. And listen to me, motherfuckers in Hollywood. You pick this show up. You give this a brilliant woman another chance because, I swear to God, I felt like I was having a flashback reading your thing. I landed in Dallas. I got a text from my manager saying, let me know when you're in the car.
Uh-oh.
There's no good way to tell you this. Yeah. Yeah. I remember it was at Christmas time. They were like, Merry Christmas. Your show's canceled.
They actually replaced you with Danny Bonaducci.
Yes.
Right.
For a couple of
nights. I remember that.
Yes, that was me. The Stephanie Miller Show starring Danny Bonaducci.
Yeah.
The show business angel of death. But so... You said, people talk about looking for white spaces in the market, and then you're like, oh, wait, maybe the white space is this for a reason because they don't give it a chance. They pull the plug.
Yeah.
And, we're both turning 40 this week.
Shut up.
You're much younger. And it's just, you're right. And there also are so many niches now. Mm-hmm. There's so many places for content that I am begging you, Hollywood, because I do think that's true. I look at what's happened to Hillary, right? I mean, this is part of this whole female blue wave, the women's marches. Women are fucking pissed, man. The most qualified woman in history got rat-fucked out of the presidency.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of misogyny in that campaign.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just, I think that...
That was like a turning point for me personally.
How so?
I guess because I always sort of... I don't know. I guess because I knew on some level... how misogynistic and patriarchal our society was, but I sort of thought ultimately, I don't know, it wasn't or something. And then I guess when Hillary won but lost and Trump was elected, I just had a real reckoning with what is our country and what are the messages that we're sending through our media, through the television shows that we watch, through the late night programming that we watch, and how do we shift the narrative? How do we change it?
Yes. And Busy, I feel like that, there's such a confluence here in everything we're talking about women getting second chances. Mm-hmm. Joe Biden's run how many times? I mean, God love him. I'll vote for him if he's the nominee. He's a fine man, but he's run how
many
times before?
Right now,
but
he's got to stop.
Right, Bernie can run again. He's almost 80. But Hillary, of course, has to absolutely shut the fuck up and go knit. And it's just, I think it's,
I love her don't give a fuck attitude though now on Twitter. Like nothing makes me happier than when she's like salty
Hillary
on
with
Twitter.
No fucks to give.
Absolutely. But that was also
fantastic. So
when she was Secretary of State and it was like text from Hillary and she's out drinking with Secret Service in
Columbia.
She had
a 70% approval rating.
Hillary. Everyone loved her.
I mean, this is what Russia did though.
Yeah.
This is what I'm saying. This is what Russia did that people still don't even realize. In this town hall we were just talking about, they're like, well, I can vote for Benghazi. You're like, That's a completely made up story that she was exonerated in. But I you know, I
but
guess
this is this other thing that's happening. This all has to do with media. I mean, I really do believe it. It all comes back to the stuff that we consume.
Yeah.
For entertainment and for news. And I think that in the last like 20 years, there's just been such a decline in what's available to the masses in this country in terms of the quality of stuff and the messaging that's getting across and in broadcast television. I mean, with like the advent of the worst reality TV you can imagine,
right.
All of a sudden, like, Americans are getting dumber and dumber. Yep. All of the good shows go to the channels that you have to pay for.
Let me make another pitch, because I believe in you.
Yeah.
And I love you already, and I don't even know you. But I watched a bunch of stuff of your show, Busy, on the E! Network. Mm-hmm. It just reminded me, because you're, well, if I wasn't also turning 40, you could be my daughter. But I just thought, like, I had the same thing. I had great reviews, not necessarily the show, me personally. You great reviews. Your show is great. And I'm just saying that you got 6 months with that kind of buzz is, I feel like it is congruous to female candidates and Hillary and, you know, all of that. Because I remember thinking, like, oh, I'm going to be able to do all kinds of stuff. And I couldn't get arrested after my late night show got canceled. And I thought, and yet... Again, Jon Stewart with half my ratings got The Daily Show. Conan O'Brien with exactly my ratings got a multi-year contract.
Well, you look at like, and who's I feel like making you, the choice, like who's making the decisions.
The man. Your voice is, particularly after this, you know, and I know that wasn't something you, because you said in your monologue on your show, you're like, we don't really get political here and this is not what I really want.
Yeah.
But your voice is so powerful, like. There's got to be another place for you to, you know what I mean? Because that, anyway.
Yeah, I think
right,
so.
I'm on a crusade.
I think there will be. I just think that we culturally need to look at the choices that we're making, but also that are being given to us. And that is, again, like we just said, you know, we talk about inclusivity and diversity, and then the top people in charge of making the decisions all still look exactly the same. Mm-hmm. And they're going to gravitate toward things that reflect themselves, not what reflect the rest America. Of the world or even ideologically speaking, what should be reflected, what the rest of the world like should be striving toward, you know?
Yeah.
So you get like two, you know, what's his name? That horrible abuser puts like 2.5 men on the air for a million years, you know, which is just reinforcing like terrible ideas about women and men. And...
Charlie Sheen has also done the happy hour. So let's just.
All right. Well, I have nothing. I don't know him personally. I just, you know, I'm just saying.
I know. I hear you.
You know, Jimmy Kimmel just did the reboot of the Norman Lear stuff.
Yeah.
The
Jeffersons and All in the Family.
And you look at those shows and you think like, wow, that man really, I mean, was obviously brilliant for so many reasons, but he also sort of culturally looked at the climate of the country at the time. Yeah, and he was like, wait, how can I make an impact on our society through art? And
but you got to make them laugh first. And that's what you know.
You have to be subversive. Let's no one wants to watch The Daily Show in the red states. No one wants to watch Samantha Bee or John Oliver in the red states. Yeah. But you know what they will watch? Me with fucking tequila telling them that like we should be able to, you know, talk about our periods and that women should be paid equally. And you can't hit people over the head with it. No one fucking wants that. Everyone's an expert.
I hear
you. What I mean?
If you make them laugh, that you don't, they don't realize they learned something.
Exactly.
They're like, oh,
but no
funny.
One. Yeah. But somewhere along the line, we like collectively entertainment industry was like, we're just gonna appeal to the lowest common denominator, and like people can get hit in the nuts and like marry, you know, get married off to a construction worker, and we'll lie to them and it'll tell them it's a millionaire, and like. That's what we're going to go for.
Let's talk about what else we have in common. Chris and I both lived in Chicago. You were born in Oak Park.
Oak Park.
Which is, you know, the one thing you can't do in Oak Park is...
is park.
You can't park. There's no park in there.
You got to go out the Eisenhower.
I lived off the Pulaski in, all near Schaumburg.
Yeah,
the other Polacks. And then I lived off Wacker there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
My mom and dad were both born and raised in... Chicago.
Oh yeah.
So I was like many generations Chicagoan.
Yeah.
My grandfather was the president of the Pipe Fitters Union.
Nice.
Yeah.
That is like the most Chicago job ever.
The most Chicago you could be.
Yeah. Pipe Fitter, you're just happy to see me.
Yeah. Yeah. And awesome. My other grandfather was the editor of a small newspaper in the 50s that I became, got absorbed into another newspaper. I don't know. My mom knows the whole story. I don't. Really
but
not,
you, but. Okay, so you're like me. I was born in D.C., but because my dad was a congressman and ran for vice president, but I was only three, so I don't remember D.C. We moved to Lackport, which is also good because that flat A was also available.
Love
to
a flat
me.
A.
Yeah, because from Lackport, yeah, I yeah. took the Skagitwada. But you worked and lived in Arizona, so you moved to Arizona.
Yeah.
So that's where you really know.
I really grew up in Arizona. I really grew up.
Chaparral High School.
I went to Chaparral.
Yeah. Also some A's in there. Hi.
Yeah, and then moved out here for college, and I went to Loyola Marymount University, and then started acting when I was 19, 20 years old.
Nice. Okay, wait. So on television, you have get your story straight, woman. You were named Busy by your mom, or a babysitter named Susie? Which is it?
It's unclear. The babysitter thing. Yeah, Stephanie, you have to read my book. Like the stories.
I haven't read it yet, but I've read almost every Cliff Note about it, and I will read it this weekend.
My family are very. It's very hard to disseminate like what's real and what's not. So, we think that it was this babysitter. Shishi was what I called her.
Shishi, who would
call me the busy baby, Busy Lizzie. Oh. And then but in my baby book, by the time I'm 6 months old, my mom didn't write much in my baby book because I was the second kid. But by the time
she's like,
she's
the other and the other one.
And
yeah.
by the way, I now as a mother totally get it. Like I always felt such a personal affront about it growing up. And now my second kid, who is a true delight. I'm obsessed with her. She's fantastic. I think I wrote four things in her baby book. Yeah. But anyway, by the time I'm 6 months, Birdie's my almost 11
year old. You're like, I was tortured with a weird name. So I am going to made mommy strong and learn how to get along. So I'm going to give you weird names too.
I don't know weird names. Birdie, first of all,
Birdie
is like,
Cricket.
Birdie's like a throwback to the 1950s.
Yeah, okay. Oh, that kind of got it.
And Cricket is a nickname technically, but as I grew up with a nickname for Elizabeth, I decided that if we wanted to name her a nickname, we wanted to call her Cricket. We were just going to name her Cricket because I hated that first day of school with your new teachers. And they say, Elizabeth. And then you have to explain. Yeah. I actually like to be called Busy. And then they give you a look.
Uh-huh.
And roll their eyes.
What's it like when you arrive at a restaurant with your family? Busy? Cricket?
Stephanie. I mean, we're in LA.
Yeah.
So honestly,
their kids named Apple.
I mean, what if
those
you're
are
there
average
with,
names?
Yeah. If you're there with, I don't know, like, you know, what's his
I think
what,
there are four
what,
different
what
boys.
What am I thinking of? Demi Moore's kids. Like, what if there's like a bunch
Scout
of
rumor.
Yeah. Hollywood names and everyone's confused?
I think that at my daughter's elementary school, there are four boys named Wolf.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh,
okay. I think like, nice. You know, there's a lot of unique names happening.
Yeah.
But honestly, I would take my girls' names over.
I love them, actually.
You know, some names that I've heard.
I love them.
Don't want to get too specific.
I'm not going to appreciate anyone.
So wait.
You're going to shame some kids in her class.
Yeah.
No.
Talking to you, Wolf. Wolf, not a blitzer. You went to Loyola Marymount, and you dated where you met Colin Hanks, Tom Hanks on a date
awesome.
For a while.
Mm-hmm.
Colin, who's also a talented actor.
Yeah, he was my college boyfriend.
Aww.
And we both, he got the TV show Roswell, and I got Freaks and Geeks the same pilot season, and then we both left school to be actors on TV. We dated for a while, and now our families are very close friends, and they're he and his wife is like one of my closest friends. Oh, cool. And it's really nice.
You're like everyone's best friend. All right, can we just talk about my favorite thing, that you worked in the Toy Fair circuit as a real life Barbie?
This is a true story.
I think also Kristen Chenoweth did that, but you were spotted at the toy convention by Sharon Stone, who was so impressed with your performance that she told you would be a star.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, is that in my? That might be in my book.
What?
I can't remember.
What is a toy fair circuit? What do you do as a real life Barbie?
It's just an industrial like fair for toys for the toy market, and all the toy buyers come and they choose. I mean, of course, like, toy stores don't even exist anymore. I don't know what they do. They still do it. But it's like where they, you know, it's like,
introduce new toys.
Yeah, it's like what E3 is for gaming and electronics. It's like, this is like they introduce the new toys for the next year.
The Consumer Electronics Show is in Vegas every year.
It's exactly. Like, oh, okay. It's any it's any sort of trade show, but it's for toys. And Mattel.
But what do you do as a real life Barbie? One.
Well, they dress you up. Yeah, they dress you up. This is what they used. This was in the 90s and early 2000s. Actually, I didn't do it in the early 2000s, but in the late 90s. They dress you up as a life-size version of the doll. And then you have a script about, you know, projected sales, why this doll is unique, why they should purchase this doll for their stores or whatever. And like statistics. Mm-hmm. And we predict 14% growth. And with Barbies, we know that girls are trending toward, you know, hair dye. So this Barbie comes with a special chalk for her hair. And then you, the girl can use it on herself. And you do this spiel for the buyers, for the toy buyers. And that's how, and they move through.
I don't know if you can tell, but you are already my new best friend. I'm a lipstickless, and I need
Stephanie
beauty tips from you because you talk about eyelashes. I don't. I need to figure out eyelashes. I can't. I did the extensions.
Actually, what's this right now? I just noticed.
I know.
Yeah,
that's
there's
what,
one.
That's my problem.
Off.
That's my problem. I need beauty tips for, because I had extensions, and then they're a pain in the ass, and they're expensive.
I don't do
but
any
you
of that.
You talk about an eyelash curler.
I
you
curl. Said,
yes.
I'm obsessed with. I think I might. Oh no! Oh, I just switched purses. Right. My friend gave this to me for my birthday, but I'm almost always travel with an eyelash curler.
Is it going off?
Yeah. Yes.
I'm having a Britney Spears because I'm so touched that you're here. Busy Phillips is also a best-selling author. This book sounds fantastic. I seriously have to read it. This will only hurt a little.
Yeah.
Debuted on the New York Times bestseller
list. Yeah, that was exciting.
I learned about you from your congressional testimony. You're like, I'm a mom of two kids, 10 and 5, little girls. I'm a best-selling author. Like, I feel like I knew you. But so, and I love this review. It says, many autobiographical books by famous actresses such as Phillips almost never meet the quality of their film or TV work, but Phillips is the exception.
Oh, that's really nice. I don't know where you read that, but that's nice.
It doesn't matter.
I don't. I try not to read stuff like that for myself, personally.
But there's, I want to talk to you about some stuff in it, because I thought it's so relatable to women. Doesn't matter, right? Gay, straight, old, young, whatever. You say, a famous, gorgeous, now former guy friend of yours told her, people would think she was truly beautiful. She talked less.
Mm-hmm.
That her personality is just a lot.
Mm-hmm.
How many times have I heard that?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Men love a woman who, and there's part of me that I don't know. It's hard to nail down sexuality. Mm-hmm. Physically, like, I was attracted to and in love with men when I was younger, but I would just say men have a hard time with really strong women. And you say exactly the thing I thought. You said men love a woman who laughs at the joke, especially if the joke's at her expense.
Yeah.
Like, my experience was men think a woman with a sense of humor means she thinks you're funny.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she laughs at your jokes.
That's right. And that they can also sort of, the joke can always be at your expense and you can laugh it off.
Right.
You know, I think that's like a super misogynistic way that men relate to strong women.
Right.
Obviously.
Well, you've obviously, you've overcome that, because I think, I remember dating another male comic when I lived in Chicago, and I had a morning drive radio show at that time, and I remember, you know, we had both sets one night at a club, and I had a really great set, and I just remember he said, you make more in an hour than I make in like a year or something, and I was like, oh, this is not, and sure enough, like, that lasted like another week or two.
Okay. It takes a really strong it has, historically speaking, although I think it's generational too. I think that millennials and probably the younger generation is not gonna have a similar thing that we have, because by the way, our generation, you're a little bit older than me.
No.
But like your generation, my generation, we didn't have it modeled for us. We didn't really have it modeled for us.
You and were so, like, oh my God, I know your nephew. Or you said cousin. I was like, yes, let's go with cousin. It's my nephew, Paul Fitzgerald.
Oh, the best.
Handsome, romantic, my tiny baby nephew.
Best. You know,
handsome, romantic,
can I just tell you a
real, talented actor,
the stories
director,
the
writer.
Stories in the book. Paul and I got so drunk at a wedding. He's good friends with my
husband.
He's
in your book.
I think I might have changed his name. You know, people who, it depends, names.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Sure.
So drunk at a wedding, in Napa Valley, and he was spinning me on the dance floor. Paul Fitzgerald can dance like nobody's business.
Mm-hmm.
And he was spinning me on the dance floor, and, the bride is like, I see her dancing up to me, and I was like, oh, hey girl. Hey. And she's like, just gently tucks my entire left boob back into my dress.
Yeah. Your tit.
I was a tit out at the wedding, dancing. And
one
she
tit
was,
out. Yeah.
Because of Paul.
Well, because Paul does that to
he
women.
He does. Yeah. The boobs just came flying out. And she was like, the photographer had to come find me outside because you were ruining so many shots.
We've never had to use pixelating.
Mortified.
Oh,
and Paul was like, darling, I didn't even notice.
I didn't know.
He's like, darling, I was just looking in your eyes.
Darling.
Like,
oh my God, he always says darling.
Yeah.
Darling. I was in the dance,
darling,
man.
I was just looking
it's
in your eyes.
It's that Lynchburg in him.
I love it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he's incredible.
Southern gentleman.
He really is. Nephew. He really is. And then I went and found my husband and I was like, we weren't married yet.
So
he was my boyfriend and I was like, this is what happens when you won't dance with me.
Explain.
Angry.
Your husband is?
My husband is a writer and a director, Mark Silverstein. And his writing partner and directing partner is a woman named Abby Cohn, who went to college with Paul Fitzgerald.
Which
nice.
With my nephew. Yeah, so that's how we knew. But anyway, okay, so much fascinating stuff to get to. But so he directed you in I Feel Pretty, the Amy Schumer movie, which you were
in.
Because you talk about girl issues, like just body image stuff. Mm-hmm. We also have something else in common. We've both also gone to SoulCycle still drunk, which is fantastic.
I love it when that tequila comes out of your pores while you're on the bike.
It's like there's a fine line between hungover and still drunk.
Yeah.
You still go.
Fine line. Yes.
Because that wolf won't eat itself or whatever.
No. Right. If you're not feeding the right wolf, right?
Yeah.
Have you heard that SoulCycle story?
No.
All have two wolves inside us. One is angry and jealous and something. The other wolf's whatever. And, you know, you're like, which wolf wins? Which wolf wins? Yes.
Yeah.
Angela.
Yeah.
Which wolf wins? The one you feed.
Wait,
the one you fucking feed. Yes.
Wait, so
Angela's my guru.
Wait, she's my guru too. I talk about her in my book.
Oh my God. You need to read her book.
Send me this book immediately.
You must know my husband, Mark, from Seoul. He goes to Angela every class.
Well, I moved to Hollywood now because I live closer to here, but I used to always go to West Hollywood and I try to get to Angela when I can. We're speaking SoulCycle now. You don't speak SoulCycle. But I go to Hollywood now.
You know,
to
she's in I Feel Pretty. Angela.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Mark put her in the movie.
That's where Amy pulls off the bike
and Mark
passes
goes to
out.
Pixie, too. I'm going to show you a picture of my husband. You know him.
I probably do.
You 100% know him.
Oh, my God.
But, like,
oh
what's
God.
Weird is that, yes, what's weird is that Paul is your nephew and a dear friend of ours, but also that this is my husband. You know this guy? Look.
Wait. Oh, you know, I can picture him in spandex. Yes.
Yeah, he wears like shorts and a tank top.
Okay. Yeah. As your husband. Okay.
Okay.
All right. So wait a minute.
That's amazing.
You also, I loved what you said because you're so sort of hopeful in the book. You say you talk about advice you got actually from Linda Cardellini. Mm-hmm. You said it only takes one job to change your life. And
right.
I thought, you know, you talk about busier struggles like we all have. By the way, Travis, is it a good or bad sign that my Because Trump wine glass broke right before Busy got here? Does that mean we're fucked or does that mean like maybe we're almost done?
You don't
need
it anymore.
Our Because
That's
Trump?
The world telling you don't need that wine glass anymore. That means he's going.
I hope so. Yeah. I hope he doesn't start a war to try to stay there.
Ah, thank you. Okay. But anyway, but you just talk about because we've all had people that have either passed away or just are really dealing with serious personal stress on top of... Mm-hmm. Trump stress, right? I just thought like it's that thing, right? They say like, you know, it's always darkest before the light.
Right.
You know, but you said it only takes one job to change your life. And I thought like, same thing for me. Like, you know, I'm single and I'm always wanted that 40-year conversation my parents have. And I'm thinking like, but everyone says, oh, well, dating sucks until it doesn't anymore until you meet that one. It takes one person. It takes one job.
Right.
And I think like, I was felt suicidal and was out of work for 2 years after my latest TV show was canceled, and I met Ron, my guy that
business partner,
and I make fun of him, but like, you know, it, like a white knight appeared, and you know, we started this show 15 years ago, and I thought like it takes one job to change your life. It takes one person.
Yeah.
I keep talking about it in this age of Trump, like do one random act of kindness. It takes one person. It takes one job. It takes one. It is amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, and I think that. That can help keep you optimistic in dark times. And then you realize that it also is cumulative. It also takes all the other jobs that came before it. You know what I mean? It also takes all
they
the other.
You to be what?
Yeah. In order for you to either be able to recognize it, be able to latch on to it, you know, you picking him picking you to partner with.
But you talk-
you had that because of all your experience previously.
But you too, when you talk about, I mean, just your honesty, you probably get this has saved lives, right?
I don't know.
I mean, you talked about suffering from postpartum depression, which, again, is another thing. A lot of women, and you said, you know, struggling with mental illness, I think, is actually getting help feels so difficult. And I felt this. I just had a friend say, you know, like, because my mom has broke her hip. She's 96. She just has Alzheimer's. I'm going through a lot of stress myself. But you said, I felt like, ugh, I have to find someone and then go explain all the things I'm thinking and feeling. No, that's okay. I'm just going to stay here in my brain that won't stop turning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's me.
Yeah.
I mean, I literally, there's so much I read about you, Busy, that I was like, oh, that's me.
Yeah.
Like,
a lot of people.
But a lot
that.
Of women do that.
Seriously.
Like, that's why you're resonating with so many women. You're like, I do know you. Oh, I know you.
Well, even some guys feel that way, too. You know?
I felt that way. Of course. Yeah. Of course. But I'm talking about her specific stuff about, you know, abortion and about body image, and all the stuff that you talk about, Busy. But but of course, that's, you know.
Mm-hmm. Sure. It looks like you talk about anxiety a lot.
Yeah, I talk about anxiety. That started on Instagram and social media, talking about how I've dealt with my anxiety and what it is and what it feels like for me. It's different for everybody. And, you know, just I think that the deal is we're in this age where we're so oversaturated by all of this shit, right? And the deal is to find a way through it that's positive. So like the thing that's positive about social media is that it provides a community. So you could be like, you know, the only gay kid in your like small town in the Midwest or whatever, that you know, you feel totally alone and isolated and all that stuff. And you can find an online community that supports you and gives you strength and gives you the you know, feeling that like there is, it does get better. There's more out there. I can move. I can get out, you know?
You resonate. Someone said to me, they said, never judge the inside of your life on the outside of someone else's life on Facebook or
Right.
Because people only post the good stuff on Facebook.
But you say that. You say people are like, oh, your girls look so sweet. And I'm like, well, yeah, because I'm not going to post their whole horrible moments for
you to
see.
Well, I'm not going to do that. Not to those kids.
And there's private stuff with your husband you don't talk about.
Yeah,
me too. Like,
and
even
if you post your anxieties on Facebook, you kind of get shunned.
Really?
By friends. I feel that way.
That sucks.
Yeah.
I don't know Facebook, though. I don't do Facebook.
Okay.
Don't blame me.
I feel like there are ways to find through social media. There are ways to find connection and community.
You're right.
And there are the positives to it that you just have to dig a little bit, to try to.
But this is why you are described as everybody's dream BFF, the female Mr. Rogers who knows all the people in her neighborhood.
Oh, that's
because
funny.
You talked about how this spring Busy cried while talking about the mom guilt she felt because Birdie's stuffed bears were left behind on a vacation in Hawaii. What ensued was dozens of Instagram stories about friends and hotel staff searching for the bears.
Aww.
Radar was found safe, but sadly, Flat Bear remains MIA.
R.I.P.
It reminds me
R.I.P.
of
Flat Bear.
Best in Show. Like, where's Busy Bee?
I'm the Busy Bee. The Busy Bee! I know. I truly, I did feel like a terrible mom. I also felt like a bad mom because it was my older daughter's stuffed bears, but like my younger daughter, we had kept track of her stuffed animals, so like she had hers, and then my older daughter felt that she had been given.
But her baby book is full.
Her baby book's full. It's a good lesson for her to learn early. Life is full of inequalities.
I love what you said about I Feel Pretty, Amy Schumer movie you were in, your husband directed. You said, I'm so angry that I'm always hard on myself. The things that I fundamentally hold to be true as a feminist somehow do not apply to me. And I mean, it's interesting. I mean, sometimes as a gay woman or as a feminist, people are like, oh, why do you? But I'm a girl and I grew up with these images of women in movies and TV.
Right.
And you can't help
that
you care about what you look like.
Well, I think that, it's like what we've been programmed with. And so the secret is, especially if you are a person that has involvement with younger women, you have to try to help, you know, undo the programming for future generations. And certainly I think that ad agencies have taken it seriously in the last like 10 years, maybe. I think that there has been some movement in television and film in terms of like more inclusivity.
Well, you talk about, I find it strange.
Kinds of different people.
Yeah, different shaped people, yeah, different color people.
Well, that's what you say. Yeah. I find it strange. People get obsessed about how fast actresses take off their baby weight.
Yeah.
Because you have two girls and you're like, you know.
It really bums me out.
But you say, and then, but here's where you resonate. You say, I'm actually incapable of lying. I'm like a parody of a person who can't lie. So that's why you resonate with women across all the, you know, spectrums, mm-hmm. because you're like, you know, fuck that.
Yeah.
Women don't take off baby weight that fast. Yeah. That's insane.
No, it is insane. It is insane. And like the pressures that, you know, actors feel for the, you know, to fit back into the clothes, to get back on set, to all those things. It's highly unrealistic. But again, Stephanie, I'm going to come back to this. The people that are in charge of making the decisions are, again,
men. Yeah.
And they're like, wait, I wouldn't fuck her at that weight. So no, I'm not kidding you.
No,
it is that basic.
I know.
It is that basic.
I know.
I didn't get a part. I write about the story in my book. It was super, it was really horrible for me at the time. But after I had my first daughter, the creators of a show, the star of the show, all wanted to cast me as the love interest for the show. And the head of the network said, I was too fat. Like, I still had my baby weight. And they were like, you know, it literally comes down to like, I wouldn't fuck her. So therefore she can't be, even though the creator of the show, mm-hmm. the star, everybody wanted me to be the part. They wouldn't give it to me because the network execs felt sitting in their offices that, you know, I'm not hot enough because I'm 20 pounds overweight.
And I don't know if it was the opposite thing, Fizzy, but I remember a Disney executive telling me that their focus group testing for my show, they said, well, women aren't going to like you because you look like you're going to steal their husband. And I was like, well.
Right. That's just perpetrating like a patriarchal idea of what a woman looks like.
But,
no, right. But that's all it all, you know, and to be honest, like women are at, in some cases are as guilty as the men are in some of these, you know, perpetrating some of these ideas and continuing to put into the world the same thing.
And then you talk about your kids in that same vein. You say, mm-hmm. I think it's important for kids to express themselves with bad fashion. I struggle a little bit now because I have a daughter and I feel with fashion like they're sexualizing the kids too young.
Yeah.
Like little kids in high heels and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
No, I know. And I don't have kids, but I feel like there is that Halloween, like you're like, oh, you're a horror fairy or a horror Frozen, something.
Oh, like every costume's like slutty.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. And that's hard.
Yeah, it is.
So like you'd be a 10 and a 5-year-old little girl where you're like, it's too young to, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty, well, but then again, I do think, because my kids, I don't limit their consumption. Well, no, we have parental controls and stuff, but like my older daughter especially is like very, very aware of everything in the world. But I think that she grows up in a house where we talk about certain things in certain ways, and I make choices about how I talk about my body. I've made a very specific choice about not talking about other women's appearance or bodies ever in front of my daughters or in the house.
Yeah.
And she doesn't gravitate towards that stuff, and that could change because obviously it might, but she feels I think she feels empowered by the way that we're raising her to make different choices.
I bet your daughters are going to be president.
At least president of a network, Stephanie.
Yes.
Right, exactly.
And
which is more important
the right
for us.
The right shows.
Yeah,
more important
exactly.
For,
that's the
for
more
someone
important.
That feels like a 90-year-old needs a late night show again.
Yeah.
Okay. This was just random and I loved it. I feel like you can never have enough whimsical throw pillows in your house or in your life. My husband disagrees. What
That's
does
awesome.
That mean?
I love that.
What do your throw pillows look like?
I just like throw pillows.
Okay.
I like a decorative pillow.
How are they whimsical? What's
that? I don't know.
Them?
Like, they have like, I don't know. They don't have, I'm not like, you know, it's 9:00. I'm that's not my, like,
bless
that's
this
not
mess.
My, yeah, no, I'm not that vibe. But I just like, I like weird, I don't know. I like throw pillows.
Okay, can you explain why you had
I don't
a,
even know why. Where you're pulling this from, Stephanie? That's a deep dive, I feel like.
I did a deep dive,
I don't know
man.
What that is.
That's my job as producer to give her all the deep
you
dive.
You also like designing, creating, and baking very intricate theme-based custom design cakes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Based on the movie Tangled.
Oh, I did one. I've done tons.
Okay, for your daughter, Birdie, when she was 3.
Uh-huh. What? Huh?
What's your favorite cake you've ever made?
The Tangled one was pretty awesome. I really liked baking cakes. It was something my mom did. My parents, when they were first married, my dad was in the Navy and was stationed in Hawaii. And I think my mom had a lot of time on her hands. And so she took a cake decorating class. Well, she did. She took a cake decorating class. And then growing up, we always had these really amazing birthday cakes that she would make for us. And my sister didn't really... Well, my sister makes cakes
how many
now,
sibs?
But just one, older sister. Yeah. She didn't really take to the caking as much as I did. And so I just learned, my mom just taught me what she knew, and I loved making cakes. And I started when I was like in my early 20s, I would make cakes for all my friends. Oh, maybe my late teens. Oh. I would like make cakes for all my friends' birthdays and all this stuff.
Yeah.
But here's like the greatest.
I saw them on Jimmy Kimmel. They're astonishing.
They're pretty cool.
Yeah.
The greatest irony of all time is that my daughters don't love cake. So no. For their birthday,
no. You know what? Yeah, fuck them. Let them eat cake. So can I just say, let them eat cake?
So for Birdie's birthday, she like never wants. She doesn't want a cake anymore. She just wants snow cones or I don't know. She wants other stuff.
Fine. Yeah,
snow
cones are outside the box.
Fucking communist. Rebels.
I'm sorry.
Okay. Can you mm-hmm. explain one thing? Because I love Blades of Glory. What's your story by credit in Blades of Glory? Because we particularly love Denver.
It's a whole chapter in the book. Yeah. You got to read it.
We love
you, Denver City by the Bay.
What?
It's an exhausting story, but it also is, you know, like basically the whole thematically what I tried to do with my memoir was that I wanted to speak to my experience growing up at this particular time as a woman, but also in Hollywood at this particular time, and how much it had affected who I became and influenced me. And you know, and that was one of those stories that had a lot to do with men getting their voice and me not having mine. And it was a bummer. It was a real setback for me. It was really difficult and emotionally draining.
You famously talk in your book about on Freaks and Geeks that James Franco like shoved you to the floor mm-hmm. in like a scene and then apologized. But you sort of talk about, you know, what women just kind of, because he's charming and handsome, and you just were like, oh, okay. And then you said, I found myself apologizing to him. What was that about?
Well, yeah. I mean, that is a story that we had talked about. Well, everybody on the show, like we had talked about it collectively for years and talked about it on panels, like a Paley Center panel or something, whatever. And then I guess when the book came out in light of the year previous of Me Too, and I guess James had faced his own sort of things, allegations or whatever.
Yeah.
That story really was the one from my book that got taken and blown up and sort of put into the machine of the internet. And that was really annoying for me for a few reasons, because I felt like, I wrote this book. I worked really hard on it. I did it myself. And then all of the headlines that were coming out in the week before it came out were reduced to being about a dude.
Yeah, of course.
It was exhausting. It was just exhausting. I was like, this again? This is what my whole fucking book's about. Like, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah, don't you get it? That this is,
But also to illustrate just how things have changed, I do think that those 19-year-old kids were on a set today and that situation happened, it wouldn't be tolerated. And I think that he would be fired. You know, I mean,
and you said he wasn't fired. He just was forced to apologize.
Like a slap on the wrist. He like was forced to apologize to me. And, you know, it was like a little bit like, oh, you know, he's method and they're it's tricky. And James and I are fine. I'm like, we've dealt with it. And, you know, he's Soul Cycles with Mark.
He's what?
He's Soul Cycles with Mark.
You guys mock us, but Soul Cycle is the.
But it's truly uniter. Like, you know, it's truly one of the stories that I can point to in my career in Hollywood, which is that boys, you know, the men had preferential treatment. Like, you can be crazy and a man in this industry, but if you're crazy and a woman, you can fucking forget it. You're not getting hired again. You're not getting cast. You're getting fired. You're getting written off of shows.
Sean Young.
Deborah Winger.
Exactly.
You can be brilliant as a woman.
Margot Kidder.
Yeah. I mean, there are so many examples.
They coined the phrase whactress. Oh, she's a whactress.
And I just feel, I mean, obviously, like, you know, hashtag time's up. But like that's over. Yeah. That at least in our industry, I think you're starting to see accountability for men's bad behavior on set.
I feel hopeful too, Busy, in part that's because of you, because of the power of your testimony, of the reaction to your, you know me campaign. Your friendship with Michelle Williams. I loved reading about, you met on the set of Dawson's Creek. You said, I liked her immediately. She offered me a Fig Newton. My best friend since I was five, Tracy Richards of Lockport, New York, I offered her a graham cracker at the bus stop. but you said she helped, talk you through your divorce, your marriage problems. And,
I didn't get divorced.
No, I know, of course, but that you stayed together, but that she was that kind of friend, mm-hmm. that she counseled you through that. And look what she's been through with Heath, that she lost Heath Ledger. Mm-hmm. And you just think,
everybody has got their stuff, man, and I do feel like, forming strong relationships is what we got to do to get through it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, one more moment from your book. You were at Hillary's election night party
in
2016 in New York, started to get visibly upset when Trump began pulling ahead. Lady Gaga noticed you crying from across the room, pointed at you and shouted, "No, we need positivity. No tears. This is not over."
Yeah, and I was like, girl, it's over.
All right, well, you were right and she was wrong. But my point is, the power
the
of the sister.
The Abbey that night in West Hollywood.
Yes!
It was really traumatic. That night was so traumatic.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The point is, we're going to win the world because of women like you. I hope so. Your tweet that you just said, exhausted by idiots.
I am exhausted by idiots, always. But there's this, there's a quote from the Talmud, which is the oral.
I know what it is.
Okay, fine.
Right.
So the quote from the Talmud is, you're not obligated to complete the work,
Yentl.
But neither are you free to abandon it.
Yeah.
You're not obligated to complete the work, but neither are you free to abandon it.
Yeah.
So that's what I have taken to heart. Yeah. It might not be my job to complete it. Many women have come before me. Women will come after me.
We all stand on each other's shoulders.
Just because it feels insurmountable at times, just because the environment feels insurmountable at times, just because Trump feels insurmountable at times, it doesn't mean that we're allowed to turn our backs and ignore it. So that's how I try to move through the world.
You are my new Shiro.
Oh, you're so nice. Thanks.
You're my Mrs. Rogers. You're
what?
Whatever.
Mr.
People
Rogers.
Call her the female Mrs. Rogers.
Yeah.
Mr. Rogers.
Okay.
All right. I don't know what to end with.
For adults.
I feel like
with wine.
Exactly.
Should we do Born This Way? Should we do, I don't know, something Gaga?
Yeah, I love Gaga.
Sisterhood. Should we do something?
I should go get my nails done.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I have gels. Talk to me about that, because I have gels. They're supposed to last for 2 weeks.
Appointment.
And look at this. This is already chipping.
I do hard.
I love
gel.
Your yellow nails at the House Judiciary hearing.
Yeah.
You had bright yellow nails.
Yeah, I didn't even think about changing that color.
Were they gels?
Yeah, gels.
Oh,
I do
they're
hard
fantastic.
Gel. Hard gel is different than what you have on your nails. You have to find some place that does the hard Japanese gel nail.
What?
Yeah. It's different.
Now you're on a quest.
I don't know. This is like,
you were not born
this
way.
Offline.
You weren't born this way. Were your nails? What? I don't. What? Ow!
Between this and the drag queen teaching how to put on lipstick.
Yeah.
She's also been a judge on RuPaul's Drag Race. We've had several of the queens here.
Nina West was here.
Oh, Nina West, amazing. Alaska Thunderfuck.
Yep.
Amazing. I love them. Talk about somebody putting something amazing into the world, into mainstream and into pop culture. That RuPaul
Absolutely.
Is really changing the hearts
Fantastic.
And minds of people who maybe would think other, thought otherwise 5 years ago, 10
Busy
years ago,
Phillips,
20 years ago.
Thanks for getting unbusy for
Thank
us.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We couldn't help it.
Thanks.
She's never heard that joke. Busy Phillips.
Yeah, thank you, Busy.
Don't be a drag, just be a queen. Whether you're broke or evergreen, you're black, white, beige, Chola, descent. You're Lebanese, you're Orient. Whether life's disabilities left you outcast, bullied, or teased, rejoice. Hey, this is Frangela, and we host The Final Word with Frangela and Idiot of the Week podcast. And if you enjoyed this episode, you'll love our show, where every week we talk about real news, real funny. So come on over and listen to The Final Word with Frangela and find it at sexyliberal.com and on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, and everywhere else you get your podcasts.
Debt. You go to bed thinking about it. You wake up thinking about it, right? Here's the truth. The system traps you in debt. High interest credit cards and loans makes it nearly impossible to pay off all your debt. And insane inflation keeps you stuck paycheck to paycheck. Done with Debt is your lifeline. Done with Debt has an ingenious new strategy to help erase your debt faster and easier than you thought possible. Done with Debt analyzes all the debt options you qualify for. They know how to reduce bills. They know how to cut interest rates. Their skilled staff of negotiators knows how to get debt out of your life permanently without bankruptcy and without a loan. Done with Debt, they're the experts in brilliant strategies for eliminating debt. But you need to hurry because some debt solutions are time sensitive. Time to finally get some sleep. Time to rest easy. Here's how easy they make it. Go to donewithdebt.com. That's donewithdebt.com. One more time. DoneWithDebt.com. Do it now. DoneWithDebt.com.